CheersCast is part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Hey, Sam, I'm serious about that offer now. I want to move you up. What do you say?
Oh, sounds tempting.
Well, I see you behind that bar, the more convinced I am. Your talents are being wasted.
Yeah, I know, but they won't let me bring a bed in here.
You want to go where everybody knows your name?
Hello and welcome back to CheersCast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and joining me on this episode is our very own network ringer, returning guest and friend, Omar Uden. What's up, Omar?
Hey, Ryan. Good to be here. How are you?
Good to be back. Good to have you. We're deep into the season, obviously. Kirstie Alley has been a stalwart member of the show now, but I do want to hear your thoughts because you had a lot to say about the Diane years and the nature of Cheers as an entity and as a show when Diane was here. And now we're seeing this transition and we're fully entrenched. I mean, it's something that I have mentioned over a lot of recent episodes. The ensemble has really come to rally around Rebecca and make her an integral part of the show. I think at this point, she's as much the lead as Sam is, and deservedly so, based on the quality of her performance. But was there anything else that you wanted to add to that, or any other thoughts about just the change of this season?
Well, you know, I think you make a good point there. I guess I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall when they're going through the network is going through their audition process. You're kind of brainstorming replacements because you have such such huge shoes to fill, and you really are at a creative pivot point as to whether you want to take the ostensible replacement for Diane and continue to push this sort of will they or won't they dynamic and center the whole show around them, or whether you're going to use this as a creative launching pad or an opportunity to bring the whole ensemble in without detracting anything from, the new addition. And I think, I'm sure you've covered this exhaustively, but they handled it pretty masterfully in sort of changing the atmospherics and subtle dynamics of the show and playing to Kirstie Alley's strengths and bringing out some of Ted Danson's tendencies that were a little bit more buried, during those first few years. And they do it seamlessly. And we'll get more into it, I'm sure, as we're talking about this episode. And I'm sure you discussed it in earlier season six episodes. But one thing that I really, really have come to appreciate in these early Rebecca Howe years is the chasm that exists between her buttoned up image that she presents, especially at the beginning, and the absolute mess that she becomes further on in her run. And I guess, when I was a kid watching this, and even Ryan, when you and I were in high school and in college and talking about Cheers, I guess I was laboring under the misapprehension that it was a change that happened gradually over time, where, at the beginning of season six, she was definitely this buttoned up corporate executive, take no nonsense, whatever. And then, maybe you only really see the cracks a couple years in, and it's like, no. You actually see it quite immediately, and Kirstie Alley must have had a lot of fun, and the writers must have had a lot of fun playing with that dichotomy. And she does a very masterful job balancing those acts. And I think this is a very good example of that balance that she's carrying. And I don't think I properly appreciated she was dealing with that dichotomy from the day she walked in the door.
I think the greatest Rebecca seasons, the greatest Rebecca episodes, the epitome of her as a character when she's at her strongest, is that delicate balance between uptight superior and purely neurotic mess. And if they go too far in either direction, it just becomes a little bit less funny. If she's too much of the corporate ice queen, like she was a little bit in the first handful of episodes before we started to see the cracks, okay, she's a foil for Sam, but she seems a little bit more antagonistic. And then in the later seasons, when she's almost too much of a mess that it's almost caricaturish, it's a little bit of her goes a long way. So we'll see, but definitely, yeah, we're definitely in this era now where it feels like, yeah, they're able to thread that needle very finely and get the best of both of those worlds. So The Sam in the Gray Flannel Suit. This one is written by Sherry Aitken and Bill Steinkellner, directed by Tim Barry, another guest director. We've had a bunch of them this season. The original air date, and Tim Barry was, he was an executive and co-producer of Cheers for almost the entire life of the show. So he was firmly entrenched in Cheers. He wasn't like a journeyman just coming on. I guess they just needed an extra one, and because he was so familiar with the show, he stepped in. The original air date was Thursday, March 3rd, 1988. Evan Drake hires Sam for a new corporate position, much to the confusion and resentment of Rebecca. Sam is proud of his new office job, despite not fully understanding what he's supposed to do besides pitch for the corporate softball team during the playoffs. Rebecca deduces that Sam is a ringer brought on by Evan to help the team, and once the season is over, Sam will be released. Sam initially rejects this idea, thinking Rebecca is just jealous. He confronts Evan directly, however, the CEO admits that is exactly what is going on. Sam refuses to play for the softball team anymore at the cost of his new job, but at least he has his dignity. Until he goes back to Cheers to see Rebecca. Rather than apologize for thinking she was jealous, he pretends to feel depressed and violated by the company until she sits on the couch and consoles him. He makes a move on her and she rejects him again. Then, utterly exhausted by his shameless behavior, she surrenders and welcomes him to make love to her, despite the fact that she will only lie there like dead weight. Dismayed at her absence of enthusiasm, Sam walks out. All right, buddy, what did you think about this one?
I thought it was excellent. I thought it really captured the dynamic of those early Rebecca years, as I alluded to. And I still think the chemistry between Sam and Rebecca is playful, sexy. You start to see the cracks in Rebecca's facade. And I guess I would ask you, because by the time we get to the end of season six, fair to say that we have a pretty decent formulation of Evan Drake in terms of his presence and what it does to Rebecca, and, you know, like what his whole deal is. And I think this episode kind of epitomizes it. His just sort of like his professional gleeful indifference and focus on the bottom line. And to me, I guess, again, going back to when I was younger and watching it, I always assumed there was much more to the Evan Drake character than there actually ended up being. But to me, it's just like, no, this is just a window into how desperate and craven Rebecca is. He is a suit, nothing more, nothing less. But he has a sort of like attaboy whimsical charm that like kind of just always makes me feel good to have him on screen. I'm wondering like what your appraisal of his performance has been thus far, his presence.
It's so much just like the natural charisma of Tom Skerritt. And I've mentioned that so much, just like he just makes every episode better, even when he's not the focal point of the episode. And in this case, doesn't really add very much comedically to the episode. That's not the nature of his role. And you don't think of Tom Skerritt as a comedic actor, but when he had to be, he was very, very funny in the show. But yeah, and in this case, this episode is possibly, I would have to go back, but possibly the only Evan Drake appearance that isn't really a focus of the Rebecca longing for him and trying to get his attention and him being oblivious to her. Really, we don't like all our scenes. We get a little bit of that, but it's mostly the Evan and Sam relationship in this case, and that, you know, it seems like they're buddy-buddy, and at this point they've had a kind of camaraderie, but it's very one-sided. We see that this is just Evan using Sam as much as he needs to. Like, they are not peers or even friends or anything. So thinking about the nature of Evan as a whole, we'll get much more into him in the season finale, but he is the primary obstacle that is like the primary obstacle between Sam and Rebecca getting together this season is the fact that she is hopelessly in love with another man. But unlike a Frasier type of character, he doesn't think about her. He doesn't care about her. And his seeming indifference or obliviousness to her is what sets her off and drives her crazy. So he, as an obstacle in that, right, he functions both as getting the most out of Rebecca comedically and making us see like how truly manic she can be, and also just frustrating Sam and keeping him from achieving his goal of, you know, sleeping with the boss.
That's a great point. And, you know, you really made me think here by talking about, by kind of putting his actual screen time and comedic value into context, because as I sit here and think about it, listening to you, you're right. He's not actually on screen that much in the episode relative to his presence and like how it affects the other characters. And I think that's probably the best thing he has going for him, is that he has a presence that hangs over everyone. And, you know, these people are kind of being moved around like chess pieces, while he's just kind of like blithely just kind of like going on his merry way, which is just kind of a neat little trick. And, you know, the other thing that made an impression about this episode to me was that there's that scene, you know, in Sam's office when Rebecca initially wants to sort of gleefully break the news to him that he's only being used as a ringer, as a means to win, to advance in the playoffs for the corporate softball team. And then Sam lets his guard down and gets really personal about how this position was an opportunity for him to, I don't know, mend fences. He said it was the first time he'd talked to his dad in something like 3 years.
Yeah.
And I didn't know how that dynamic was. If I missed some reference earlier in the season or in earlier seasons about that, but it was striking to me that it was a real personal moment, the kind of a couple serious minutes that you got more in those first five seasons during the Diane years. Mm-hmm. And the compassion that Rebecca treated it with, was pretty striking, because I just feel like one of the big transitions the show made was from strictly rom-com to like a broad ensemble comedy. And I think one of the things that probably got pushed aside was the emphasis on more serious scenes and storylines. They were still there, but they were much more few and farther between. And this is still a striking example of them being able to bring their fastball in that department.
Yeah, that does feel like a very important moment. It's surprising in a show like this. I don't even think I need all the fingers on one hand to count the number of times Sam talks about his parents in the whole 11 seasons of the show. It's very rarely brought up. We do know he has this brother, Derek, and we know from the first season that he lived in his brother's shadow, which you got to figure is kind of a tall order for a guy who played professional baseball and was a professional athlete for the Boston Red Sox, one of the premier baseball clubs, and to be a professional.
Yeah, and like his brother
player.
Was like a like an international lawyer, like,
yeah,
which,
but sure, like,
which is obviously a great job, but it's still a pitcher for the Red Sox beats lawyer in terms of, you know, being famous.
Right. Unless now you think about it in this context, if this is the kind of job that his dad respects. If his parents or his father in particular was never a sports guy, never cared about that, and was always had like a different kind of inclination, and the son that he respected was the guy who spoke multiple languages, was an international lawyer, had his own jet, and did all these other things, and the son who was, you know, a professional athlete was just the other one. If that was the kind of upbringing or the family that Sam came from, then it does make a little bit more sense that despite his God, a professional athlete and like a pennant winner, then you got to say, oh yeah, then, you know, yeah, he that wasn't good enough for his dad because his dad wanted a different kind of kid. And now feeling in this corporate job, feeling like his dad might respect him for the first time. It is an interesting little view into maybe the childhood that Sam grew up with.
Yeah, maybe Sam's family was more Frasier-like than we would have thought, or like at least respected, you know, like the white collar world and lived in the white collar milieu more than we had thought. Or maybe they were just disappointed that Sam was a relief pitcher and not a starter. Who knows? But
right.
You know, it's that's an interesting dynamic.
And I mean, we could spin that even further if we want to and say that like maybe that fueled his alcoholism or something like that. Who knows?
Yeah, that's a possibility.
Anyway, kind of going more through the episode chronologically with our teaser, the actual employees are getting their paychecks from Rebecca, and Carla complains to Rebecca that her paycheck is a little short, and Rebecca mentions that Carla was late a few times last week, so she had to dock her pay. Carla protests. She said she had very good excuses for being late 3 times, and Rebecca's like, "What, you had 3 deaths in the family?" And Rebecca tells her that a handy little trick to avoid being late is to set your watch ahead, so you trick yourself into showing up to places early. Carla does so, setting her watch ahead 1 hour, and she's like, hey, now it's lunchtime. She walks out, and we get the capper that Woody says, no wonder I'm so hungry now. So
it's and for me, the best part about that is not just the timing of Woody Harrelson's line delivery, but also that he brought out his lunchbox, like as a prop, and it just started like opening it. And it's just like, it's those nice little physical touches, because the line itself would have been, you know, just sort of a slight chuckle, but it's that he goes through the motions of like taking out his lunch that for some reason just, you know, was extra delightful.
Yeah. So after the credits, Rebecca comes in looking for Sam. Carla says that Sam is upstairs having lunch with Evan Drake. Rebecca immediately scoffs at that, but then when it's confirmed, she's like, well, what does this mean? Why would the two of them be eating lunch together? Have they become friends or something like that? And when did I start talking to myself? Which is a nice little reflective moment, and it actually sets up a comeback later on. Carla suggests that Evan is going to give Sam his old job back, which would be Rebecca's job. And when the guys come down and Evan kind of blows her off to go use the phone in her office, Rebecca attacks Sam, calls him a scum-sucking, power-hungry, backbiting creep. And he's like, look, she's not giving me a job. He's giving me a different job at corporate. And she repeats it, calling him a scum-sucking, power-hungry, backbiting creep. And once Evan comes back out, like we see that Sam himself is a little bit unsure about his own qualifications, mentioning that he barely finished or barely got into college. And Rebecca still continues this line of suspicion. She's like, why would he hire Sam? This doesn't make sense. Why make him an executive? And what is the matter with me? Why wouldn't he promote me? And Woody overhears this and just goes, for one thing, Ms. Howe, you talk to yourself a whole lot.
It's a great line. It's a great line. You know, one of the things that occurred to me during that whole scene and setup is, and you know, Ryan, you do a pretty good job among all your podcasts kind of talking about how stuff, and a lot of podcasts do this when they review media from a long time ago. You know, you try to review sort of the scenes in light of, you know, kind of where we are now socially. And it is funny, like in the wake of the last decade and how we think about and how we conceive about, you know, feminist issues and specifically the idea of women in the workplace. One thing that occurred to me is that there's this easy shorthand that Sam and Evan have as they're coming downstairs from lunch and they're just sort of like joshing each other and like, you know, and Evan, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm definitely paraphrasing when Evan was like, hey, you know, you have a, Sam's expressing some doubts about his qualifications for, you know, a promotion or a new job at corporate. And Evan's like, well, I'm sure you have some talents. And Sam's just like, well, they don't let me bring, you know, a bed into work. And it was this whole like attaboy thing that, you know, you can, that they both kind of laughed at. And, you know, again, not to be a buzzkill at all, but like it did kind of bring to bear this idea of like there is just kind of a shorthand that dudes in the white collar workforce have with each other that they're able to, you know, there's just sort of an easy shortcuts for communication that they have. And they often are able to use that either consciously or unconsciously to like exclude women from that dialogue. And I've seen this, you know, in my own line of work at you know, bigger law offices that I deal with, where it's just like, yeah, we'll go golfing. The partners will go golfing and you know, we'll have this shorthand. And, you know, women are often excluded from that little universe. And it just makes it that much harder to network and everything. Now, again, with Rebecca and her social and corporate climbing, it's easy to play it as a law as a laugh. And, you know, and I'm still not sure how much of Rebecca's like obsession with Evan is based on like actually being in love with him, actually being in love with his status, or just wanting a higher, a better job herself. I always get that kind of mixed up in my head, but there is an element where I do kind of sympathize and I think about it in the context of where we are now and our understanding. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's a valid critique for this episode, especially when you see her question, like Sam's completely unfit for the job that he gets. They actually create a job title for him, and we see that it's just they just need somebody for their softball team, and he's literally just taking the office of a guy who still works there and basically has to like work out of the closet for 2 weeks while this is going on, and we'll see that. So Rebecca is right to be suspicious of this. She knows that this isn't fair, and we do see hints of that in a few other episodes that I've already covered where Rebecca is the victim of sexism in the workplace. Now, sometimes we can gloss over that because we are also able to see that she is neurotic and she is crazy. And sometimes she might be incompetent when it comes down to it. So how much of her corporate execs and her superiors passing her over or not taking her seriously, how much of that is due to sexism? How much of it is due to Rebecca and her, like her own faults as a person, as a human being? it's tough to call. Certainly you can see examples where it's one or the other, and sometimes it's like, yeah, it's too close.
Yeah, and like, listen, you bring up a good point. Like, she certainly does not make it any easier on herself. But then, you know, you just look at that universe that you have to break into it. And I don't know, it's just very easily displayed that like the barriers to entry are so high. I think there was like in the meeting, right, in the sales meeting that Evan was at that Sam had to break into, I think there was like one woman and like maybe one black guy. And other than that, it was just a sea of white dudes in suits. Mm-hmm. And we just kind of take it for granted that like that's just kind of the way it was. And that's just kind of the way it is. And I don't know, it just added to me a special extra layer on top of whatever normal neuroses Rebecca had. I mean, there are just some times when you want to sit down with people like that and be like, okay, you're not completely crazy. But again, because it's played for laughs, it is entertaining. But, you know, I'm sure much like the scene at the very end, which I'm sure we'll talk about in light of our understanding about, like, you know, power dynamics and sex, didn't make me feel awesome, but it is useful to talk about, like, you know, in this heuristic, in, you know, with the context that we have now. But I thought that was just kind of interesting. The just sort of easy interplay that Evan and Sam are able to have, that so many women back then in the workforce just did not have access to.
We get a couple of scenes in Sam's office. The first time he seems to be perusing some report or evaluating it while his secretary Mimi stands over him, and it's they spend a lot of time on it. It's a long drawn out silence where he seems to be looking at this over, and finally like, Mr. Malone, people are waiting for it, and he's like, okay, tuna on toast with an iced tea.
It's like perfect. Such just great looking at the lunch menu comedy. This whole time. Like the furrowing of the brow, like the squinting, you know, like just it's brilliant. It's so well done. And like, and it's also like right after that, when they're talking about like, all right, when you get back, we're going to finish that memo. Where did we leave off?
She's like, to whom it may concern. He's like, that sounds like good. That. I like the way that sounds. Yeah. And then once she leaves him alone, we find out that he has nothing to do. He's bored. Yeah. He doesn't know what to do with himself and stuff. He's playing with a pencil sharpener.
Another great silent moment of physical comedy.
Yeah, exactly. And then he gets visited by Messrs. from the firm of Peterson, Boyd, and Clavin. And we see the guys, and they're all wearing suits. They all had the wherewithal to dress up in suits when they went to
visit. Ryan, how often do you, listen, Norm is in a suit every day. George Wendt is in a suit every day on set. You know, if I think for some reason, because they put Woody in a bunch of other situations, it was not a sea change, a huge shock to my system to see Woody in a suit. Yeah. But like, would it be fair to say that in like the 270 something episodes of Cheers, I feel like a good over under for Cliff Clavin in a suit is like 5 or 6. It was just a real big shock to the system for me.
I would say seeing him out of uniform.
Okay.
Whether he's dressed up or dressed down, I would put the average at 1.5 per season.
Okay.
So
that's a lot
take
more.
Take that away, like maybe like, you know, 10 to 20 episodes, okay, like, out of the entire 270 that he's not in uniform. Because obviously, like with weddings and stuff like that, episodes like that are special occasions where, sure, you know, he has to dress up in a suit or a tuxedo or something. There's always those.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, again, like it's not often. So yeah, it is a little bit jarring to see him wearing a suit. But you're also like, of course, he couldn't go there wearing the male uniform. Like he could, like, yeah, he'd stop exactly in the lobby. So they're playing, and I love Cliff actually has a good moment where he's looking out the window and he sees a window watcher on a scaffolding, and he's like, you'd never get me in that job, suspended 100 feet over a certain desk. He's like, let's throw something at him. Give me something to scare him. Sam is told that Evan is coming down to see. He's got some, so he's out of there. And Evan comes to see. He's like, "Hey, I'm glad you've got everything, you know, worked out. You got your pencils, you got your desk." And he sees that there's a framed picture on Sam's desk. He's like, "You've got your requisite picture of," and he lifts it up and looks at it. He's like, "Yourself."
It's a photo just a beautiful of Sam
from his baseball days. It's a big photo.
Yeah,
it's like an 8x5.
It's like perfect. And what did Sam say by way of explanation? He was like, "Was that it? Was the smallest one they had, or the biggest one they had? Like something like that. Like something just like very perfectly Sam."
Yeah. So, and I just there's this wonderful little moment. It was almost my home run for the episode when Sam was just like, "I have a question for you." He's like, "Yeah, shoot, what is it?" He's like, "What do I do?" It's just like the way he puts it there. And, you know, Evan just says, you know, it's a newly created position. So your duties are kind of, they're not defined or ill-defined or something. We'll talk about it as softball. That's what we have of this softball thing. And then, like, we find out later on when we're back at the bar, the Lillian Corporation softball team beat General Electric thanks to Sam pitching a shutout. And all the guys come in, and Sam's jersey says Heppel, is the guy he replaced. And you know, why didn't you get your own shirt? And Evan has, like, an excuse, like, it's supply problems. And all of these things are pinging on Rebecca's radar. And finally, she figures it out. She's
yeah,
like,
Sam
is the ringer.
See the light bulb go off.
Yeah, and she's like, he was just brought in, and she's standing right next to Frazier, and she's like, he was just brought in to play, help the team win. Once the season is over, he'll be fired. And she's like, I knew it. I'm not crazy. And Frazier's like, well, that's a layman's opinion. And then once she explains it to her, Frazier's like, you can't tell Sam, you know, you'll break his heart. You got to keep this to your secret. And she's like, okay, I'll do that. And then immediately Sam, as one of the guys, has to be like, Rebecca, you can be our cheerleader, but you got to lose the bra. And kind of goes into that. And like, they all start laughing at Rebecca. And it's like, oh, Sam, you fool. So then back at Sam's office a little bit later, and again, he's got like those desk toys that he's playing
with. The abacus. How great is that?
Mimi gives him the report that he asked for. He's like, great, you got colored paper. And he's looking at all things. Who the heck knows what it is? But Becca comes in. She wants to tell him the truth. But before that, he apologizes for making fun of her, and then like takes it seriously, like this almost as if like he got a memo from corporate about sexual harassment or something. And he actually has like this genuine, like thought out apology. And this is when he says, you know, he's like, this is very new for me, but like I feel so excited about this possibility, about being in this position. And that's when he says that he called his father for the first time in 3 years. And he said he was proud of him and everything like that. And this is when he's like, you know, my parents, it's their anniversary month. I invite them out here and everything. And that's when Rebecca's like, okay, stop before you do it, go any further. I've got to nip this in the bud. And she has this line. She's like, I didn't want to have to tell you this. Actually, I did want to tell you, but I wanted to enjoy it, and you've ruined that. And I have to tell you anyway. So she tells him that he's ran, and he lashes out thinking she's just jealous about his position, and he defends himself that he's a good executive by showing her the report that he commissioned with this colored paper. And he's like, look at this, do you think this? So he has Mimi call Evan, and she says he's in a deal. Sam's like, wait a minute, why wouldn't he be in there? Because that's his job, isn't it? And he has to actually look at the placard on his
desk. That is such a great great physical comedy where he's like, why are I in the sales meeting? After all, I'm the Northern Western. And like Rebecca silently hands him the plaque, which says like what? Eastern Regional Sales Director. Oh, it's so great. And like the other good part is, and I might be mixing up the moments in The Office, but I'm pretty sure I'm not. When like he storms out of there to go to the meeting and like head this off at the pass, one of the toys that he was inspecting in his office, it was that that laugh track.
You open.
And like it, you know, initially when he saw it, it was kind of goofy and fun. But then, like as he's storming out of the office and he drops that thing and like it's laughing at him, it's just again the symbolism and the comic timing is so perfect. As he has to like snatch it back up and put it on the desk and like call for it to be repaired, it's just a beautiful moment. It's very funny.
So he slips kind of unobtrusively into the meeting, but that's just as it's end, just as Evan calls the meeting to an end. And he tells them that he's backed up on paperwork and he won't be able to play the game tonight. And that's when everybody objects. They're like, what the heck is going on here? That's your only responsibility. And we find out this Heppel guy, he's upset that he gave up his office for 2 weeks. And this is when Sam realizes the truth. And Evan, I love this again, like Evan, like this is not an episode where he's used like for a lot of punchlines or anything like that, but just the natural charm and charisma of Tom Skerritt. And he plays it very straight with him. And he's like, yeah, he's like, we hired you to pitch for the team, but you turned out to be a bit of a surprise. You're a much better hitter than we anticipated.
Love that moment.
And Sam is like, I thought you wanted me from my mind, but you just wanted me from my body. And he's like, sinks into the couch. He's like, where have I heard that before? And Evan asked me, like, is it really that bad, like, being used this way? He's like, you make good money. Everybody likes you. He's like, why make us think of this? Like, you just, he's like, we can find a place for you in the company until next baseball season. And he, like, has to drop it that way. And Sam is like, no. It, like, credit to him for, like, wanting to stick with his dignity. And he's like, he only wants to stay if it's for legitimate reasons. And he shows Evan the report that he has, that he's commissioned. And he says, take a look at this. And if you don't think I'm worthy to be here, we'll just shake hands like some gentlemen. And even as he's saying it, Evan's just walking around, like, looking at a couple of
instantaneously, just, without even substantively assimilating any of it. It's just a perfect moment.
Yeah, it is, like, the perfect, like, brush off of, like, the CEO can't be bothered to take this seriously. It's like, I've got other things to do. So yeah, that handshake is wonderful. And then Sam returns with all of his stuff in his office, from his office, stuff in the box, and he feels happy to be back where he belongs. And when Woody says, Rebecca thought you'd be, gave us a heads up that we should be nice because you thought you'd feel shattered. And this is where he kind of changes tactics. And he goes to Rebecca and he sits down on the couch and he tells her that he feels shattered. She sympathizes. She sits on the couch next to him and consoles him. And he tells her how bad he feels, and he's feeling used and manipulated while he's creeping ever so closely and uncomfortably into, like, the nape of her neck and putting a knee up over her. And she is, just shoves him off, and he cops to it. He's like, I'm not a sad guy. I'm a happy, horny guy. And then, I don't know where else they could have gone with this at the end of the episode, but she just throws it back at him. She's like, if this is what you want, fine. Like, if you just want me to, like, if all, because essentially she's thrown back the situation. It's like, they didn't care for you as a person. They just wanted your body for this, as a physical specimen, yeah, for the baseball team. So let me show you how that feels. Yeah. You want to sleep with me? Here I am. I'm just going to lie down on your lap. And you can do whatever. She even slides off of his legs or whatever, and, like, is face down on the floor. She's like, yeah, go ahead, do whatever you want. And it's like, this is, he's like, how do you, like, this is how you feel. This is how I feel all the time.
It's a really brilliant, subversive way to deal with, like, a not awesome action on Sam's part. I mean, I'd be very curious, you know, when all is said and done, and if you've done this before, you know, forgive me, but if, like, you know, a show from that era that ran that long, you know, it would probably be, and especially dealing with, you know, a hornball like Sam, you could probably rank, like, the 10 most uncomfortable moments in the year 2023 viewing a show like Cheers. And I'm sure there are other moments of dialogue or physical activity in that vein, in the vein of that scene in the office. What I will say is the way Rebecca handled it and subverted it and threw it back in his face ultimately made me feel not okay, but not okay about it. Like, you know, somewhere in the middle, about, like, what happened, because it was kind of a great way to shine the light on how all this made her feel and the position she was consistently in. So I thought that was just kind of a seeming moment of brilliance on the part of the writers, and, you know, sort of an activity that, like, you know, a reaction that would ostensibly hold up well today, even if the rest of the scene would not. So I felt good, because, like I said, I'm sure if you plowed through, you know, the 270 something episodes, you could easily come up with, like, 10 scenes that, like, do not make us feel great as people in 2023 watching. And were it not for that reaction from Rebecca, I feel like that scene would have been at or near the top.
Yeah. And it's something that I've been aware of since the beginning of this show. And it's something that I've always kind of had to address, is that we are in a different time. The Cheers is a product of its time. And Sam is a character that was not only excused, but championed in this era as this type of guy's guy, this womanizer doing these things. But thankfully he's not Diane Fielding from Night Court. And there's really redeeming qualities about him, but also certainly the fact that most of the times he behaves like this, it gets thrown back in his face and he gets his comeuppance. And sometimes, like, he is rarely rewarded for this type of behavior, especially when he really crosses an ethical line. Now, just being a general womanizer and dating a lot of women and kind of being sleazy about it sometimes with like the women of Boston in general or the world or something like that. There's certainly episodes like that. But when we're talking about the way he behaves with Diane or Rebecca or other like significant characters or something like that, again, if he's being underhanded and sleazy and just kind of like cringeworthy, it usually comes back and slaps him in the face, and he's not rewarded for it. And that is kind of the one thing you excuse about it, while knowing, again, there were different standards in 1990 than there were today.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And I think there's a multidimensionality and a essential core sweetness to Sam's character, where the audience knows that, like, look, even devoid of even in context, like, or without context, like, you'd like to think that, you know, he would never let it get to that point. And the fact that, like, you know, Rebecca was like, yeah, all right, take me. And he was just like, yeah, not into this, again, was indicative of Sam's like core character when you stripped away the artifice. And it does allow a little bit of a redemptive quality to him that I appreciate. It's why I don't feel bad consistently rooting for him, because he is a good person.
One of the last lines and everything, when she's just like sliding off and he's like, is this what I can expect out of full participation? And she goes, until I get tired. And she kind of has this like almost exhausted like sound about it when she says it. I just really liked her line delivery that way. Yeah, and that's the episode. For Norm's tab, he had 4 beers this time, which brings him up to 565 for the series so far. This was really close for me, but who did you have as the employee of the week, or who was your MVP?
Oh, it's a great question. I would say Kirstie Alley, probably. I think that the decisions, for two reasons, like, I mean, well, 3 reasons. One, I mean, just the delightful neuroticism and like the paranoia at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And then the decision to be compassionate with Sam, which shows you that Rebecca has layer upon layer. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that scene at the end where she just kind of, you know, throws his Playboy qualities like back in his face. I just think you kind of get the whole Rebecca Howe experience here, especially early Rebecca Howe. And it is kind of a dynamite performance. Although, you know, I would not blame anyone for choosing Ted Danson.
I was really close and I ended up the same way. I ended up giving it to Rebecca. But yeah, I almost gave it to Sam just for the scene in the office when he's talking about his dad and his family, just because it's it's one of those rare dramatic instances where he is getting personal and he is showing the vulnerable side that is not a come on or not like a ploy of some kind. When you see some weakness or moment of levity from him that Ted Danson can knock those out of the park. And I thought that was really, and throughout every other scene he's in, he is really funny and he is really likable and jovial and everything. When he is playing with the pencil sharpener and he just gets curious and decides to put it in eraser side first and just breaks the pencil sharpener. And that's the first time he's like, Mimi, call maintenance.
So, well, then, like, doesn't he, like, he puts it in the eraser side and like it starts to malfunction. And am I remembering this wrong? Does he try to like
jammed?
Yeah, and he tries to like hide it away in the desk, and he calls me. It's just like a lot of really great subtle physical comedy in this episode.
But ultimately, I gave employee of the week to Rebecca just for everything that you said. For home run, for fun, this was tough because all of my like examples were a little bit more subtle, but ultimately, like, favorite moment was just the handshake. When Evan just asks and just doesn't even look him in the eyes because he's looking at the report and just shakes his hand. And he's like, okay, you're done. Get out.
Like, oh, no, that's a good one. I mean, for me, it was like the little laugh machine that falls off the desk and it's like mocking him and laughing at him as he's like slowly coming to the realization that he really is just a ringer.
Yeah,
that was a nice moment, too. But listen, the handshake kiss off was pretty darn good.
All right, Omar, thank you, as always, for coming on Cheerscast and talking about the show with me. People can find you on other shows throughout the network. You've been a Pod Dylan, which Pod Dylan is not part of the network anymore. Thanks, Rob. episodes of like Film and Water Podcast, you will be on future episodes of Give Me Those Star Wars, as you have been on past. So I'll have you back on one of my shows soon, and Fire and Water Records. So, yeah, thank you again for joining me with this one.
Oh, thanks for having me. It was a great episode. I look forward to coming back on this and other pods on the network.
Yeah. Thanks to all of you who listen to Cheerscast and support the show by liking and sharing on social media and leaving comments on the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon. This show is patronized by the Right On Network and Jeff and Rick Presents Unpacking the Power of the Power Pack. Go to patreon.com/FW Podcast to support your favorite show on the Fire and Water Network. Thanks everyone for listening, and until next time, we're closed.
I didn't want to have to tell you this, but now I have to.
All right. What do you got?
Well, I actually did want to have to tell you this, but I wanted to enjoy it, and now you've ruined that, and I have to tell you anyway. You're not going to be here next month.
What do you mean?
Malone, you're a ringer. Ooh, I did like doing it a little bit.